glorious revolution is the revolution which happened in 1688 glorious? Is it a revolution? Is it a series of events rather than one decisive moment in history? These are some of the things we're going to be looking at in this lecture. To some extent, it's portrayed as a black and white, in black and white colours. The point when England was saved from absolutism and the imposition of an alien Catholicism on a reluctant population. But clearly the revolution has different effects on different parts of the population and on different nations within the orbit of Great Britain. One thing is clear though, the revolution had to happen from outside, and William of Orange appeared the ideal catalyst. William was married to James's eldest daughter Mary, and therefore had a direct connection to the English throne. He was persuaded by Whig nobles in Holland that his action would be on behalf of all Protestants and all Englishmen, and would be upholding the rule of law. So therefore William set off with an army, landing in Torbay on the auspicious date of the 5th of November 1688. James and his army prevaricated, and thus William was quickly able to take control of southern England. James initially turned to the Tories for help, but when none was forthcoming, he was forced to admit defeat and flee England. At the decisive moment then, both the Whigs and Tories allied together to allow James's power to be broken. The defection of the leading Tories had engineered the rapid collapse of the king's authority. But to see the revolution as the work of a few aristocrats would be misleading. Conversely, to argue that there was no popular faction to the events would also be wrong. The consensus between the Whigs and the Tories rapidly collapsed though. In particular, this was over the issue of the church. The Tories, whilst agreeing that James had to leave, did not want the end of absolute monarchy or to tamper with the Church of England. The Whigs, on the other hand, wished a remodelled monarchy and wanted to weaken the power of the Church of England. The revolution then was intensely ideological and theological. It raised a huge amount of interest, and in 1689 alone, over 2,000 political tracts and pamphlets were published. The political factions were many, and these contributed to the collapse of the consensus. They can briefly be divided into six different groups. The first are the Loyalists, who you may term Jacobites, those who stayed loyal to James. The second group are moderate Tories, those who wanted change, but in moderation. The third group are the mainstream Tories. The fourth are moderate Whigs. The fifth, the radical Whigs. And sixthly, you can isolate out the dissenting interest who had a particular take on the Glorious Revolution and the organisation of the church and state thereafter. Alongside these political divisions, there are also religious factions. These can be divided into what has been termed the non-jurors. The non-jurors included the Archbishop of Canterbury, who refused on principle to accept William and Mary as monarchs. The second group are the High Church Conservatives, also called High Flyers, who opposed William's far-reaching policies on religion, but they did support the change in the monarch. The third group are known as the Latitudinarians, who favoured a more flexible approach to issues of dogma and ritual. The Glorious Revolution raised a number of questions about the monarchy and its position within the state. First of all, was there a coup d'etat, or had James voluntarily deserted England, as a Whig propaganda suggested? What was going to happen to the succession? Had there been a change in the constitutional position of the monarchy? Was it now elective rather than hereditary, for example? And how does all this affect the position in Scotland and Ireland, which at this time were two separate kingdoms? The historiography of the revolution has been fraught since the beginning. Almost immediately, a series of articles and histories of the revolution were produced, and they have continued to be produced to the present day. Briefly, they can be organised into different categories. Initially, there was a court Whig bias, an Anglo-centred approach, talk of the Glorious Revolution as a miraculous event, a change of monarch but without bloodshed. By the 18th century, the revolution was being discussed by people like Burke, Paine and Price as either a conservative or a radical revolution. For Burke, the revolution was conservative, a simple transfer of power. For Paine and Price, it had more radical connotations, and they put the emphasis on rights, centering around the Bill of Rights. The Whig historians of the 19th century viewed the Glorious Revolution as a sensible and respectable revolution. As we go into the 20th century, conservative revisionists argue that the revolution was not a revolution in the sense of the French Revolution, an overturning of order, but a revolution in its original sense, a turning back of the wheel full circle to the beginning. Neo-Whig historians argue that there are political and social revolutions. This is a political revolution without the social connotations of events such as the French Revolution. Marxist historians play down the achievements of 1688, instead seeing this as an event that concerned only the elite. Outside England, then, the revolution had an impact on Ireland, Scotland, and also the American colonies, where there were offshoot revolutions. Ideologically, it was a potentially liberating event, but in reality, the experience of the revolution, both in Scotland and Ireland, proved intensely disappointing. In Ireland, it led to massive bloodshed, and in America, it seemed to justify armed resistance against tyrannical government, something that was going to have increasing connotations as the 18th century progressed. The revolution also spawned constitutional change. The most important of this is the signing of the Bill of Rights by William and Mary. Among other things, this said that the levying of money for or to the use of the crown was illegal, that all elections should be held freely without any force, that there should be no standing army in peacetime. It also focused on constitutional provisions, the rule of law, parliament, that there should be free elections, frequent parliaments, and the freedom of speech within parliaments, and set out some limits on the monarch. The declaration was later turned into a statute, the Bill of Rights, in 1689. So was the Glorious Revolution a coup d'etat or an important watershed. To some extent, it depends on what perspective you're taking, whether you're looking at the position within England or from a wider international view. But this is a question that is fundamentally at the centre of the historiographical interpretations of the legislation.